Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. Reading today from a book entitled The Christian in Complete Armor. It's by William Gurnall. He was the English Bible scholar and pastor who died in 1679. Talking about the Christian's spiritual shoe, one of the elements of the armor that every Christian is to wear. And the section started out, Why Christians Must Be Ready for Trials. Well, Christ commands this frame of spirit. Christ deserves this frame of spirit. And today, this readiness evidences a heart full of grace. A gracious spirit is an excellent spirit. Flesh and blood have never yet made anyone willing to suffer, either for God or from God. The person who can do this has that other spirit, which proved Caleb to be of higher stock than this world, Numbers 14:24. A carnal heart can never suffer freely. Luther said, man's will is no more free than it is made free by grace. The more flesh in a Christian, the more clumsy he is about coming to God's feet. And where there is nothing but flesh, there is nothing but unwillingness to motivate him. But the man who finds his heart gladly warmed at God's command can be sure who has been at work. This is the line which nobody except God can draw in the soul. The Egyptians reported that Israelite women were so lively that they brought forth their babies before the midwives could get there to assist them. Truly, then, a lively heart of grace is ready to do anything that God calls on it to do. The performance of duty does not require the midwifery of lesser arguments and persuasions. The gracious heart has already exercised itself in pure love to God, obedience to his voice, and faith in the surety of his promise so continuously that even a work that is stressful to the flesh is not grievous to the spirit. It looks upward and stands ready to say, nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt, Matthew 26:39. The apostle tells us that surrender to God's afflicting hand exhibits a son's spirit within. If you endure chastening, Hebrews 12:6, God deals with you as with sons. Notice he did not say, if you are chastened, but if you endure chastening. Naked suffering never proves sonship. But to endure it with a full supply of courage, with the shoulder ready to carry it patiently, and with the expectation of future reward, these things show a childlike spirit. And the assurance which comes is especially soothing when the landlord of hell tries hard to use the saint's affliction as evidence to disprove his sonship. Here's the answer to stop the lies of this accuser's mouth. Satan, if I am not God's child, why do I so readily yield myself to his family discipline? The next point, number four, a ready frame of spirit makes the person free. Freedom is bought with a price. Birds would rather fly among the trees of the wood, even in the cold, and even in the lean seasons, than live in a golden cage with an abundance of pampering. Some men are so attached to their lifestyle on earth that they soon let it order them about and dictate standards of happiness. Before long, they become enslaved to materialism. Their heart goes after their covetousness, Ezekiel 33:31. And because money is their master, their hearts wait for it like a dog at his owner's feet. Others bow to their own reputation. They cannot enjoy anything unless they capture the place of honor everywhere they go. Haman was like this. He was the court favorite who got the king's ring to seal a decree for massacring thousands of innocent persons merely to satisfy his ambition. And it so upset his proud stomach to see one poor Jew refuse to bow that his other achievements did not seem to matter. "Yet all this availeth me nothing," Haman said, "so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate," Esther 5:13. Still a third group are snared by pleasure. Everything they do is bound up in having a good time. As the rush grows in the mud and the fish lives in water, these people cannot survive without their fun. If you separate them from entertainment and sports, their heart, like Nabal's, die like a stone inside their breasts. Now, the freedom of spirit we're talking about breaks all these chains and brings the Christian out of every kind of bondage. It teaches him to accept whatever God sends his way. If prosperity comes, he knows how to abound. Yet, if he is suddenly thrown from the saddle of pleasure, his foot will not hang in the stirrup, and his soul will not drag him after it with whining selfishness. Through grace, he is a free man and can do without all created things as long as he can have Christ's company. Paul stood on this liberty that comes only from the indwelling Holy Spirit. "All things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power of any." He was indifferent to things of this life, honor or dishonor, abundance or need, life or death. He was persuaded that a servant of Christ should not be so in love with affluence that he could not welcome need, nor have such affinity for earthly life that he runs away from every thought of death. But neither did Paul let himself become so tired of suffering that he wanted death to come merely for his own ease. A Christian rules his life with an excellent spirit if he chooses to face up to and endure unpleasant experiences rather than avoid or escape them. Number 5, readiness to suffer prepares the Christian for service. A saint cannot serve if he's not prepared to suffer. This is true because all servants have a cross which comes with their calling. If we become offended by the cross, how can we serve Christ? Now, prayer is the daily exercise of the saint, but there is no way he can please God in it unless he sincerely says, "Not my will, but thine be done." Paul was sent out to preach the grace of God to the world and to sustain the wrath of the world for God. The Lord had told Ananias that he had chosen Paul to bear his name before the Gentiles and to suffer great things for his name's sake. If Paul's preaching the gospel, even with his rare art of sweetening it, could not please the ungrateful world, it would be almost impossible for those of us who fall short of his gifts to win the world without some form of reproach, contempt, or downright persecution. This spiritual shoe, then, must be standard equipment for the preacher's foot that must walk among so many hissing serpents. Who else but a Paul, who overcame both fondness for life and fear of death, would have been willing to preach the gospel in the very den of lions? I mean at Rome, the seat of the cruel Nero. "So much as in me is, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ," Romans 1:15-16. In a word, it is the duty of every saint to make a free profession of Christ, and often this cannot be done without the threat of danger. If the person's heart is not resolved in this point, the first storm that stirs will make him tie up in any creek rather than venture out in turbulent weather. Among the chief rulers also many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, John 12:42. They might have made the attempt had the coast been clear, but they did not have the courage then to face the scorn that threatened. It does not do any good to confess God if we are not willing to lay everything at his feet. Neither is it worthwhile to set out with Christ unless we mean to complete the journey with him and not turn back because of a tempest or two. Number 6, readiness to suffer gives true enjoyment of life. It is impossible for a person to savor life unless he is prepared to lose it. Two considerations will quickly unfold this paradox for us. A, absence of fear. Where fear is, there is always torment. Even the deer who lives where there is plenty of food is slender because of anxiety. And all who let this vulture continuously feed on them will be spiritually lean as well. Nothing destroys a man's joy like the fear of losing what he already holds. And because of this insecurity, he becomes his own worst enemy. Murderers can kill only once, but by meditating on his miseries, a man kills himself 1,000 times over, as often as the fear of death steals into his mind. Once the Christian wears this piece of armor called the Gospel of Peace, his soul is prepared for both danger and death. He sits at the feast which God in his providence has now given him, and thoroughly enjoys it with no fear of a messenger of bad news knocking at the door. He can even talk about his dying hour and not spoil a crumb of his joy, as carnal men assume it must. To them, the mere mention of death in the course of their normal interchange is like the wet cloth that Hazael slapped onto a king's face. The very shock of the subject scatters all the pleasant thoughts which may have dominated the conversation only minutes before. On the other hand, the saint whose heart is prepared never tastes more sweetness in the comforts of life than when he dips these morsels into meditations of death and eternity. It causes him no more grief to think of losing his life than it does to have the first serving of food taken away to make room for the main course. David, for example, was so little tied to this world that he could declare, "I will fear no evil, even in the valley of the shadow of death." What about Peter? Did he know the secret of peace or not? He slept calmly, bound between two soldiers in a prison on the night before Herod would have brought him forth to his execution. And while these are certainly not the usual conditions for rest, he was so sound asleep that the angel had to strike him on the side to wake him. I seriously question whether Herod himself slept as well that evening as his prisoner did. No doubt this preparation of the Gospel of Peace brought Peter to such divine rest. Because he was ready to die, he was able to sleep. Why should he worry when the very worst thing death could do was to usher him into an endless rest in the arms of his beloved Lord? B. Assurance of God's care. The more willing a saint is to suffer from God or for him, the more God delights to take care of him. A good general is most concerned about the soldier who least values his own life. And so the less a Christian values himself and his interests for Christ's sake, the more careful God is to keep him from suffering or to keep him in it. Christ had both blessings in mind when he promised, "Whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it." Abraham was ready to offer up his son, and then God would not let him do it. But even if the Lord allows the enemy to strike down his saints to death, severing the soul from the body, he shows his tender care even then. The Father gathers up their blood and declares to the hopelessly cruel world who spilled it, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints." Psalm 116:15. Thus we see that by surrendering ourselves up to God's will, we engage him to take care of us no matter what happens. How much more comfortable can life be than to have our heaviest fear taken off our shoulders and rolled upon the Father? The poor widow, for instance, never prospered more richly than when the prophet cared for her by requiring that she give up all the food she had. And to reward her faith, God provided a miracle. When a person is finally brought to the foot of God and can earnestly surrender, "Lord, here I am, ready to give you all and all that I have and all that I am. My will shall be done when your will has been done in me." When the person has that kind of surrender, the Lord will oblige himself to care for that soul. Amen. Next time, why so few people are Christians? Thank you for listening. And if you would like some more audios that I think will bless you, please go to the top of my webpage, click on the word series, and choose from the list of over 200 topics that represent 3,500 audios. Our daily readings are retrievable as a podcast, and you can download the app. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun, and Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.